discovered a cure for the common Craig. A horror, trash, sci-fi, action podcast. Allow this to be your cure as well.
Welcome, listeners, to the final chapter of the 16th annual A to Z of Horror Festival.
The final chapter. That sounds so finite, Craig.
I know, it's very serious. Serious business when you wrap up a festival with the final chapter. Hey, Nicole, you remember when we did that Hellraiser watch-along?
Yeah.
Well, my sister, Amy, she let me know, because I guess during the episode we really only say that, you know, we're watching it on Hulu.
Right.
And that we have the Hellraiser Scarlet Box from Arrow Video, and we could watch it that way as well, or any other DVD release that's out there, or Blu-ray release. But she said that it's actually on some other streaming services. There's one in particular that she mentioned, Roku.
Oh, yeah?
Where apparently it's streaming free. Now, I don't know with Roku if you need the actual Roku box device.
I think it's a stick.
Yeah, or a stick.
Yeah.
A stick, a box, a device. Or if you can now get it, like, other ways. I don't know. You might have to have the stick or the box, whatever the case is.
Yeah, I think it's a stick.
Yes, you might still have to have that. There was a box at one time, Nicole. Now, there's a stick. You're right. Oh, boy.
Oh, man.
Here we are, just arguing back and forth on stick versus box. Box and stick.
Well, you're the one who's kind of carrying it on.
Yes. It's also available, I believe, currently this month on Amazon Prime, if you subscribe to The Evil Empire. Also, it is on Shudder and Hulu.
And Hulu.
Or, yeah, you can just watch it on DVD. Hell, Nicole, you can watch this sucker on VHS. And all you gotta do is cue it up right at the beginning of the movie, right before the New World Pictures logo starts floating up, sync it up, and you should be just perfectly timed with us to watch the movie with us if you'd
That's
like.
That's right.
Anyway, just a little follow-up on the Hellraiser watch-along.
Okay.
If you are interested in watching that with us. You have a few other options that we didn't mention initially. There they are. Nicole, like we said in the last episode, you've done so well watching these movies.
Yeah.
In the 16th annual A to Z of Horror Festival.
I've only missed one so far.
Only one so far.
Yeah.
Do you think you're going to be able to wrap this out with the rest of them in this final chapter?
I think so.
You think so?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We'll see what happens.
Oh.
Oh, boy. Okay. Well, since this is the final chapter, it's, you know, Halloween, Nicole. We got to get this taken care of.
That's right.
Because we got to relax and take it easy for Halloween, so we got to get this finished.
You got to carve some pumpkins.
Jack-o'-lanterns.
That's right. You got to do stuff.
You got to eat some candy.
Yeah.
Probably pizza or something, who knows, mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
You got to have something like that for Halloween.
That's right.
You don't eat salad on Halloween, everyone. Give me a break.
Maybe a salad with the pizza.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, Nicole, let's get to it. Let's wrap this up. The final chapter, Nicole.
The final chapter.
It's somewhat sad, but also, it feels like a success, Nicole. We've completed another festival.
That's right.
All right, Nicole, let's get to it.
Okay.
Listeners, are you ready? We'll be right back.
The passing of Halloween draws near, and with it, the close of the festival. Welcome to the final chapter of the 16th annual A to Z of Horror Festival.
So, Nicole, at the beginning of the 16th annual A to Z of Horror Festival, Horror, one of the things that we neglected to mention is that in every festival, I always try to work in a horror anthology movie.
Oh, that's right. That is right.
So, Nicole, what is this year's anthology movie?
Tales from the Hood.
That's right. And this one, Nicole, was released right around May 26th of 1995. It's rated R, Nicole. It runs 1 hour and 38 minutes. On IMDb, this is listed as a drama, horror, but also, like we've said before, anytime there are police in a movie, crime.
Crime.
It's called crime. So it's a crime, drama, horror. One thing they don't mention is comedy. I feel like there is some comedy in the movie.
There is a definite comedic.
Yeah, it's not as much of a comedy as one might maybe expect with kind of a goofy title, Tales from the Hood. But there are certainly some elements of comedy in it.
Yeah. More than drama.
Yeah, more than drama. Come on, there's no drama at all in this, even though there is. But, Nicole, the director is Rusty Cundiff. He's also one of the writers, along with Darren Scott. And Rusty actually appears in the movie as an actor in one of the stories as well, Nicole. Spike Lee is one of the executive producers on this movie, just for the sake of trivia.
Okay.
This movie, Nicole, had a $6 million budget. At the box office, it ended up making $11.8 million. So not a ton of money there, not a ton. The problem is, though, that it opened on 862 screens. And man, this movie was up against some fierce competition.
Yeah.
And some of these movies were on double the amount of screens. And at least two of them were on nearly triple the screens that this one was on.
Yeah.
In its opening weekend, it made $3.9 million. It opened at number 9.
Okay.
Also, there's just like an insane amount of movies that are in their first week here of release. Their opening weekend, this was Memorial Day weekend.
Oh.
And because of that, yeah, man, I mean, it's loaded. So number one that weekend, Nicole, was the all-time classic, Casper. Casper was number one, making $22 million in its opening weekend. Number two, also in its opening weekend, making just a little bit less than Casper, was Die Hard with a Vengeance, the third Die Hard movie. Braveheart, in its opening weekend, opened at number three. Number four was Crimson Tide. This was not its debut weekend. It had been out. Number five, in its debut weekend, Forget Paris. Number six, also debuting, Johnny Mnemonic. Number seven, also debuting, Mad Love. And then number eight, While You Were Sleeping, with good old Sandy Bullock. That was also not a debut. But that is a lot of movies to debut.
That's a
Casper, Die Hard with a Vengeance, Braveheart, Forget Paris, Johnny Mnemonic, Mad Love, Tales from the Hood.
That's
finally at number nine.
That's a lot.
That's
a lot
crazy
of,
amount.
A lot of just opened movies.
Yeah, just opened. And some big name ones that you remember there.
Yeah.
Like Casper, of course. All right, so Tales from the Hood, like we said, up against some stiff competition. But maybe it fits into a certain kind of genre, a certain element. And maybe it's more memorable than some of the other ones, you know? Certainly could be the case. Anyway, so what we have here with Tales from the Hood is we start off with a classic wraparound story situation. An anthology movie, as we've said numerous times in the past, Nicole, usually kicks off with some kind of a wraparound that ties things that's together.
Right. Always so, a wraparound story.
We have here with the wraparound, apparently this wraparound is titled Welcome to My Mortuary. We have a gang of hoodlums or something, because this is Tales from the Hood, so they're hoodlums. And they apparently are drug dealers, after drugs, something of that nature.
I got the understanding they came to collect some drugs.
Came to collect some drugs.
Sure.
How did they find out that these drugs were here at this mortuary? I don't really know. Is that said?
I think it said the mortician... Reached out to them. Yeah.
Okay. I wasn't sure about that. So, the person running the mortuary, the funeral director, I guess, is Mr. Sims, played by Clarence Williams III, who's been in a ton of things over the years. Uh-huh. You've got Joe Torre, not the former baseball player manager, playing the character Stack. You have DeAndre Bonds playing Ball, and you have Sam Monroe playing Bulldog. So, what kind of happens here at the beginning, Nicole? They basically go to the mortuary.
They go to the mortuary, and, you know, it's kind of creepy. So it's they don't creepy. Know if they necessarily want to go in.
Yeah.
But they ring the doorbell or knock or something. And Mr. Sims answered. And
he answers the door.
He's a quirky character.
He's definitely a bit of an oddball character.
Yeah.
And I got to say up front right here, my favorite character in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's fantastic.
He plays a really good character.
Yes.
And you like him.
You like him, Nicole.
You just like him.
You just like the guy.
So he owns the mortuary, and he's the mortician there.
And he's very odd. Yeah. Yes, as we've said. They basically tell him that they're there for the shit. And he keeps repeating that, yes, the shit.
Now where's the shit?
The shit?
The shit.
The shit that you found.
Whoa, 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 whoa. You get it when we get the shit.
The shit.
The shit.
Kill that noise, man. Let's just get the shit.
You'll get the shit.
You'll be knee deep in the shit.
Talking about the drugs.
The drugs, yeah.
And they're very threatening, you know, give us the drugs, you know, stop messing around. That is kind of what keeps happening.
Yeah. But he's proceeding to tell them the story of each of the people in the coffin.
Yeah, people he has in coffins, yeah. Really. Yes.
So he goes to each coffin and opens a story.
Yeah, has a story about him. So, yes, we'll start with the first story besides the wraparound.
Mm-hmm.
This one, apparently entitled Rogue Cop Revelation, and in the movie they just mention Clarence. They don't say the title or show the title. So Nicole and I, in our notes, we both just have this story as Clarence. Anthony Griffith plays Clarence, who is a rookie cop, Nicole.
That's right, rookie cop. And then his partner and two other cops.
Basically, they get involved in a situation where his partner is played by Michael Massey, who plays the character Newton. Michael Massey is known for being in The Crow as one of the hoodlums in that one. And then you have Wings Hauser and Dwayne Whitaker playing these other cops who they kind of roll up on as backup, I suppose, or something really.
And these are not good. Yeah, these guys are not good cops.
These are dirty cops, Nicole.
Yeah.
Definitely dirty cops. They have Tom Wright, who plays the character Martin Morehouse, and they're kind of roughing him up because apparently this guy is a bit of an agitator
political face in their town.
As far as stirring up news about dirty cops, revealing dirty cops. So he's trying to do his part to bring out and call out some sort of corruption in the police force.
Yeah.
And because of this, these cops know him and they're roughing him up.
That's right. And the young cop, he's trying to stop them.
Yes.
You know, as he should.
Right, exactly.
Because he's being a good cop.
He's being a good rookie cop. That's right.
A good rookie cop. Yeah. So basically the older cops, they tell him to leave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mind your own business.
Mind
just forget
your
it.
Business. Get out of here. And they proceed to kill the guy.
Yeah, they end up setting up a death for this guy to make him, like, to ruin his reputation, really.
Right.
So he ends up getting killed, but then he sort of comes back to haunt Clarence in a way, because Clarence made the decision to, rather than call out these dirty cops, he ends up just leaving the police force, quitting the police force. And because of this, the Martin Morehouse character comes back kind of to haunt him. I don't know if it's in a dream or some sort of waking dream. I don't remember exactly what the setup is there. But yes, Martin Morehouse basically says, okay, you need to get these dirty cops to call him out and bring him to me. And by bring them to him, he means bring him to his grave, right, the cemetery, where he's buried. And that's when things kind of pick up here.
That's when things get real.
That's right, Nicole. They get real here. Because,
well, they're being really disrespectful of his grave.
Exactly.
You know, and they're...
One of the cops starts to pee on the grave.
Yeah.
So yes, definitely very disrespectful.
Very disrespectful.
You get the impression that they agree to go to the gravesite with Clarence.
Where they're going to kill Clarence.
Yeah, they're just going to get rid of Clarence because he's the only other person that knows about what really happened. And by just eliminating him, they'll be fine.
That's right. So,
but of course, because this is a horror film, Nicole, mm-hmm, something rises out of that grave and maybe goes after those dirty cops,
that's
Nicole.
That's right. Goes after them.
So...
And puts an end to them?
Maybe. See, again, since this is a horror movie, that's probably what you can expect.
That's probably what you can expect, yeah.
I guess we don't have to spoil it any further than that on how things happen or anything. But, yes, that is essentially what happens in Rogue Cop Revelation. Tom Wright, who plays Martin Morehouse, actually appears in a prior horror anthology that we've discussed on the show in the past, Nicole, at the very beginning of the run almost. Creepshow 2, he plays the hitchhiker who's run over and then coming back to terrorize someone in that movie.
What's he keep saying?
Thanks for the ride, lady! Thanks for the ride, lady! Thanks for the ride!
That's right.
Yes. So, Nicole, then we bounce back to the mortuary.
To Mr. Sims.
With Mr. Sims. And between each of these stories, we keep doing that. But let's move on to the second full story here so far, Nicole.
Okay.
And that is what we wrote down as Walter, because that's how Mr. Sims introduces the story. Walter. The story apparently is called Boys Do Get Bruised. So what do we have here in this story with Walter, Nicole?
So Walter, a young kid.
He's a young lad.
He's going to, I get the feeling it's a new school.
Yes.
Like he's just moved to the area. Him and his mom, and he goes to school, and he's wanting to make friends, and of course, there's bullies, and they pick on him, but his teacher seems really nice.
Yeah, his teacher is played by Rusty Cundiff, who plays Richard.
So, seems really nice and caring, and then he notices that Walter has, like, a black eye,
and then a bruise on his arm later.
And then a bruise on his arm, so he's concerned,
and what does Walter say?
Walter tells him that a monster did it. Mm-hmm. You know, that it's not his mom, he didn't fall down, a monster did it.
Yeah. And he draws a picture of this kind of like green, large green muscular monster thing.
Yeah. So
with crayons.
Sure. Yeah. So then, you know, and then somebody had told him.
I think it's one of the other students. One of the, like a student that he, yeah, you know, talked befriended. To. Yeah.
So one of the students told him that if you draw your fears or something that you want to get rid of, and then you burn it or crumple it up and throw it away, it'll be gone.
Yeah.
So he draws the monster. He draws the bully.
Yes.
And he drew something else, but I don't remember what that was.
Yeah, I can't remember what that one was.
Yeah. So anyway, He crumples up the bully.
Yes. And what happens to the bully, Nicole?
The bully fell down the stairs and broke both legs and both arms.
Yes. And they say, when the ambulance arrives, they say, how does that happen? How does a kid fall down the stairs, break both arms, both legs? Well, Nicole's because he was crumpled up in a drawing on a piece of paper.
It's because Walter's upstairs in the classroom looking down on his crumpled up, you know, form being taken away.
Yeah, and I don't even think Walter really kind of tied things together there, honestly.
He didn't know that yeah, that he was going
to
happen.
I don't think that he really meant for it to happen. Yeah. No. I feel like Walter... I feel like Walter's innocent.
A good boy.
Yeah, he's a good boy, Nicole. Yeah. He's a good young lad, very innocent. So yeah, then, because of the bruises and everything like that, you have the teacher, Richard, going over, kind of for a surprise visit to Walter's home.
Yeah.
He pops in, and Walter's mom is Sissy, played by Paula J. Parker, something like that, plays Sissy, his mom, and... Sissy seems to be sort of kind of like trying to put the moves on Richard, the teacher.
She just seems very, open.
Yes. I feel like maybe she's desperate for some help, really, honestly.
Yeah.
Because as things progress here, presumably the stepfather, who is Carl, played by David Alan Grier, he comes home. He's not happy to find Richard there. He's not happy with anything.
No.
This guy...
And...
This is... If you know anything... You said Walter's a good young lad. Well, David Alan Grier is not a good man as Carl.
Right. And if you've seen David Alan Grier, he was in Living Color.
Yeah, and for me, in Living Color.
All the time, and he was so funny.
Yeah, David Alan Grier is like... He's one of my favorite parts of Living Color.
Yeah, exactly. And...
But here, Nicole,
he plays a mean dude.
He is completely devoid of any sort of sense of humor. This guy is a nasty individual. Basically what this story is about is domestic abuse.
Yeah.
As far as child abuse and as far as like abuse toward Sissy as well.
Exactly. Spousal.
Yeah.
So, he's the monster.
Yes.
In this situation. So, you don't have to spoil the rest.
Yeah, we don't necessarily have to spoil the rest of what happens. But, yes, let's just say things wrap up here in this story.
Yeah, this is a good part, though, in this story.
Yes.
I like this final part.
Yeah. Well, we won't say what happens.
Yeah, so. I know.
We'll let the people watch it.
Okay.
You watch it on your own, listeners. All right, so then the third... story within the wraparound. This one stars Corbin Burnson as the character Duke Metger. And this guy, he's apparently a former member of the KKK who is now running for senator.
Yeah. So.
And this story is called KKK Comeuppance, Nicole.
That's right. So he lives in this former plantation-run house. So the story goes when Juneteenth happened and they were supposed to let all the slaves go, he just killed them instead.
Yeah, and a lot of them. I think he says at one point, like five of them or something, three or five of them were hanging from this tree right out front.
Yeah, so it doesn't sound like a very good history in this house to be living in as... Even as anybody, I think.
Yeah, as anyone, but specifically a former member of the KKK and someone running for Senate.
Right. But anyway, there was an older woman who built dolls for the souls to inhabit.
Yes, a Miss Cobbs.
So she, to save the souls, she built them dolls. So they inhabit the dolls.
Mm-hmm.
And the dolls are supposed to be hidden somewhere in the house.
Yeah, that's the rumor, that the dolls are somewhere in the house. Apparently, Duke says that he's searched the house for them. He can't find them anywhere. There is a painting, however, a painting of Miss Cobbs with all of these dolls that's in one of the rooms.
Yeah, so they just hadn't, and Duke at one time says after the election he's going to have the whole house painted. So, meaning he's
going to
paint over that.
Yeah, he's going to get rid of that.
He just hasn't had time. Yes. So.
And yeah, so he has an advisor. The character's name is Rhodey, played by Roger Smith. who is in the house with him, kind of giving him, hey, giving him tips on how to deal with the media, because he's not been doing a very great job.
That's right. He's very abrasive.
Yes.
And, yeah, nobody's going to vote for him.
Yes. So, Rhodey, there's a situation where he falls down the stairs, and dies.
Falling down the stairs. Yeah.
And Duke, apparently, I guess there's, because he was filming him, he was filming Rhodey
giving a speech
as an example for Duke.
Yeah.
For when he deals with the media. And as the camera is dropping, he goes back and watches the footage, because it has to be like, what happened here? He just fell down the stairs? So he rewatches the footage, looks at the footage, and as the camera's panning down, he sees what, Nicole?
He sees one of the dolls.
Yeah, kind of sitting very near the stairs right there.
Yeah.
So then he's a little weirded out, and that's where...
As rightly anybody should be, because that's kind of scary.
Yes. So that's kind of where the movie takes off, Nicole. Or the movie, the story, this particular story takes off, Nicole.
Yeah.
Is these dolls begin to come into play. There's kind of one main doll, but then as Corbin Burnson's character keeps trying to evade that doll, get rid of that doll, they keep re-showing the painting of Miss Cobbs with the dolls. Mm-hmm. And first you just see one figure missing from the dolls on the painting. And then as the story progresses, you keep seeing other ones start to disappear off the painting.
Yeah.
Because what, Nicole?
The dolls are joining the fight.
Yes, they've now entered reality, I guess. And yeah, they're going after him. And finally, Nicole, by the end of it...
Everybody's
all
gone.
All the dolls are gone. Yeah. So, it's basically your classic kind of horror anthology story involving dolls, really. Which, there are a lot of these over the years. What did you think of this one, Nicole? I thought it was pretty entertaining.
Yes, I thought it was... I thought this one was good.
Okay. Well, Nicole, we also have Art Evans in the story here, playing the character Eli. Eli's kind of this character that keeps popping up and kind of knows the history and keeps making a scene outside when, like, Corbin Burnson's trying to get in his car and drive away or something like that. Yes, within the media, he keeps popping up, too. And that's kind of an amusing character because he's very outspoken and just kind of gives... Well, he's giving him a hard time for being a horrible person. And then, Nicole, the final main story before we wrap up the wraparound. This one is called Hardcore Convert. And it's basically a two-person act with some other people kind of thrown in that are lesser characters. You have Lamont Bentley playing Crazy K, and you have Rosalind Cash playing Dr. Cushing. Do you think that's a throwback to Peter Cushing, Nicole?
I don't know.
It could very well be. And this was Rosalind Cash. This was her final film. She was in The Omega Man back in 1971 with Charlton Heston. And yes, her final film, she passed away at age 56. Anyway, what's this story, Nicole? This one, to me, is a little convoluted.
So, you're not really sure what's happening. So,
Crazy K is basically like your classic kind of gangbanger.
Right. And Crazy K, he sees somebody that he doesn't like, so he chases him down. He's in his car and he chases this guy down. The guy gets out of his car and he shoots him.
Yes.
So the people in the
house... Crazy K shoots him.
Yeah, Crazy K shoots this guy. The people that... The other guy, the shot guy...
Yes.
The guy that gets shot...
Apparently his friends.
His friends come out of the house and just start shooting at Crazy K.
Yes.
And, you know, there's a gunfight, you know, so...
People are killed, the police show up.
Yeah, so then you're... All of a sudden, you just see Crazy K doing some sit-ups in jail.
Yeah, basically, he's taken to prison, and he's offered a chance then by Rosalind Cash's character, Dr. Cushing, not Peter Cushing, to be rehabilitated in a way.
Right. And he's not really too, you know, interested
at
that time.
Yeah, he's a very angry young man, certainly. This is no Walter that we're talking about here, Nicole.
That's right.
But, basically, Dr. Cushing's character puts him in this strange device where he's like attached to this table and has all these things, you know, attached to him. This hose put up his nose and all kinds That's of right. stuff is going on. He's strapped to this table thing. And he's subjected then to watching a bunch of footage about Black history, kind of deaths involving gangs, involving hangings, yeah. things like that. And it's very like Clockwork Orange, where Alex
like
is forced to watch horrible footage.
Right.
Yeah, like he's getting conditioned. Because Dr. Cushing's character says to him, you're in this gang warfare, you keep killing other young Black people, you know, this needs to stop, is basically what it's where it's coming
right,
from here.
Right. So after that session is done, it seems like he goes on to other sessions.
Other forms of rehabilitation.
Other forms.
Yeah, he's put into this room kind of by himself, and he starts to, like, see visions of people who he's killed in his past.
Right.
And, yeah, that's basically, there's a final twist. But basically, that's kind of what is happening in this story. And I don't know that we should really reveal the final twist, because that ties in too much with everything else. So let's just avoid that. We'll
okay.
avoid that.
Okay, so that's it for the last story.
Yes, we'll just leave it at that with Hardcore Convert. Now, Nicole, the wraparound story, back to this one. How do things kind of wrap up here, Nicole?
So I will say that in this anthology, I feel like the wraparound is a big part of
yes.
these. Like, you know, some are just a small mention in the beginning and end. This wraparound really had a lot of meat to it.
I agree with that, yes.
So we're back to Mr. Sims and the guys. And, so basically he leads them into this last, or in the basement, this last room. And he's like, yeah, this is where
they're still looking for the shit.
This yeah. is where the shit is. So he leads them to three coffins. And
there are three of them.
And there are three of them.
So you can kind of guess where this is going. And again, I don't know. I hate to spoil too much about
the ending. I don't
want to
spoil anything, but
because the ending
gets
a little crazy, and yes.
Mr. Sims, he's the best character.
Mr. Sims definitely reveals himself to be something other than what you expect
yeah.
as you're going through things here. All right, Nicole, let's just leave it at that. We're going to leave it at that with Tales from the Hood here.
Okay.
So, Nicole, what we do, of course, with anthology movies is we have to have an anthology death match,
okay.
Nicole. This is classic Cure for the Common Cray.
Classic.
So we bring out R2-D2, and R2 is going to decide who goes first.
And who gets to knock out something.
Yes. So basically what we're going to do is eliminate stories to decide which story is the champion from Tales from the Hood.
Okay.
So in this case, Nicole, and a lot of times in the past, we've always eliminated the wraparound story because there's not much to it.
Right.
But in this case, I think we have to include it.
I think we're including it.
Okay. So we're in agreement. So technically we've got five stories to work with here.
Okay.
Four main ones and then the wraparound.
Okay.
That's five, Nicole. 4 + 1 = 5. All right, R2. And I'm always odd. Nicole's always even. R2 says, number five, Nicole.
You first.
That means I'm the oddball. I've got to go first. And this is a very easy choice for me.
Mm-hmm.
Out of these stories, for me, the final story, Hardcore Convert, is definitely the weakest. Although it does tie into the wraparound, it's still just kind of a mess, I think. After the other stories, which I think are pretty solid, this one, there's just not a whole lot to it, in my opinion. So, I'll bump off Hardcore Convert. And now, Nicole, you're going to have to make the next cut from Tales from the Hood.
The next cut. Ooh. My choice to boot is Rogue Cop Revelation.
All right, so that's getting bumped off next. That's
okay.
the story of Clarence, Martin Morehouse, and the Dirty Cops.
Yeah.
All right, so that one's getting bumped off.
That's getting bumped.
So now, we've got three left here, Nicole.
Okay.
The next one I'm going to bump off is Corbin Burnson's Duke Metgar in KKK Comeuppance. I'm going to bump that one off. So the dolls, that's the story with the dolls.
That's right, okay.
Going to knock that one off. It's okay, I think it's a fun story, but maybe just because in anthology movies and in horror in general, you see so many of these movies with dolls and things like that, I feel like maybe it's a little played out, but I think it works pretty well here with the painting and everything,
yeah.
But just not, it's just not my favorite one.
Okay, so I get the final.
You get the final cut here between Welcome to My Mortuary, the wraparound with Mr. Sims, or Boys Do Get Bruised with Walter and the Monster Stepfather.
Okay, well, this is really easy for me because I'm going to bump Boys Do Get Bruised because you just can't beat Mr. Sims.
You can't beat Mr. Sims.
In Welcome to My Mortuary.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like that's the way I would have gone too. The Mr. Sims character is just so great. You can't get rid of him.
You can't get rid of him.
Can't do it.
It's definitely the best story in the whole movie.
Yeah. And even the way the supporting characters tie in with Mr. Sims is just a lot of fun, too.
Yeah.
So, Nicole, as a whole, the movie as a whole now, Tales from the Hood, a mass or murder, Nicole?
Well, I would watch it again, so I guess we just have to amass it.
I guess you gotta amass it,
though. I guess we're gonna amass it.
Yeah, well, so yes, I too have to agree, I would amass Tales from the Hood. However, as far as horror anthologies go, I've only seen this one a couple times, and it's been a many years since I've seen it. And I don't like it as much as a lot of other horror anthologies, but it still has elements that are a lot of fun. Did you know, Nicole, there are now two sequels to Tales from the Hood?
I did not.
Tales from the Hood 2, I believe, came out in 2018. So that's a long time after 1995, Nicole.
Yeah.
And then I think just this year, Tales from the Hood 3 was released as well. Those are both also anthology movies. Just, you know, some information for people that want to watch more Tales from the Hood or Tales from the Hood in general. Okay, Nicole?
Okay.
Let's roll, bud.
In this neighborhood is a house where souls never rest. You're invited to share their secrets.
I've been waiting for you, boys.
You're invited to share their tales.
Unless, of course, you're scared.
Tales of madness. Ah! Of revenge.
The dolls don't want you there. They want reparation. Ah!
Of horror.
He thinks he needs to kill the monster.
Now, your most terrifying nightmare and your most frightening reality are about to meet on the streets.
And this is a trip, homie. I don't need nothing from no house of dead folks, okay?
Death. It comes in many strange packages.
The producer of Menace to Society and executive producer Spike Lee will take you to the outer limits of the inner city.
Welcome to hell!
Tales from the Hood. Chill. Or be chilled.
I mean, I don't need to be hearing this, man.
You?
So what I was asking, Nicole, because like we've said in the past, we don't necessarily watch the movies exactly in alphabetical order. We'll do them in these groupings for the sake of the podcast, and then Nicole gets to pick which one she's interested in watching at that given time. So I was reading off descriptions, and for this one, I read off the description, and after I was done and Nicole was making her choice, she said, "Let's watch the one with the time-traveling witch." Because that's kind of what this movie's about. This movie, Nicole, is called The Undead, which is kind of a weird title for this movie.
It is. It makes you think of zombies or, you know, vampire or something that's, you know, undead.
Yeah, but it's really about a time-traveling witch. This one, Nicole, was released March 15th of 1957. It is unrated. It runs 1 hour and 11 minutes. Nicole, this one, according to IMDb, is a fantasy horror.
I can see that.
I guess I can see that.
I'll agree.
Yeah. Okay. This movie, Nicole, is directed by Roger Corman. You've heard of Roger Corman, yeah. I'm sure. Roger Corman directs this one. And what do we have with this movie, Nicole? Why is it a movie about a time-traveling witch?
Well, you have this woman.
Yes. Her name is Diana Love, in the present time, anyway.
That's right.
So played by Pamela Duncan.
So you have Diana. She gets basically recruited picked up.
Off the street.
Yeah.
Maybe she's a streetwalker.
Maybe.
Is what is suggested, I think,
maybe,
Nicole?
Yes. Maybe. Suggested.
Yeah.
So she gets picked up by, and he's a doctor.
Quintus Ratcliffe, played by the actor Val Dufour. Dufour? Yeah. Quintus is what they call him in the movie.
So Quintus, you know, recruits her to go to this man's office.
Yes, with another doctor.
Another doctor. And he wants to show this doctor his theory. And his theory is that you can put a person into a hypnotic state and put them so deep that they can go back in time along your familial line. So, basically, she can go back into her past lives.
Yeah. And that's what happens here in The Undead, Nicole. She's hypnotized, and then she ends up in the body of someone from her past, Helene, who is, I guess, accused of being a witch.
Yeah, so she goes back in time, and she's all chained up because Helene's been accused of witchcraft. So she's going to die the next morning because it's the witch's Sabbath. And at dawn, she's going to be beheaded.
Yes, Nicole.
So it's all about trying to prove her innocence and, you know, escaping this.
Yes.
Is basically what the movie is all about.
Yeah, you have Richard Garland playing Pendragon, who's kind of the love interest from Helene's past.
Yeah.
Keeps trying to rescue her. But then you have another character. You have Livia, played by Allison Hayes, who's this kind of a sexy witch, Nicole.
Yeah.
She's always trying to put the moves on
Pendragon.
And Livia has an imp, Nicole.
She does have an imp.
An imp played by Billy Barty, who's a classic little person actor. And at this point, in 1957, Nicole, he's only 33 years old.
That's right.
That's kind of cool.
That is.
Because later on, he pops up in things like Willow and Masters of the Universe, Legend, things like that.
Sure.
That we remember from the 80s.
Yeah.
And he's much older, of course, than he was in 1957, Nicole.
Yeah, exactly.
You have another interesting character, Smolkin, who's the gravedigger in the movie, Nicole.
Yeah.
It's played by Mel Wells. And what's the interesting thing about Smolkin, Nicole?
He's been told his brain's been, like, addled by witches.
I guess so, yeah.
Basically. So he sings a lot of songs, and
he's just great. Constantly singing these songs, creating these songs kind of on the fly.
And they're fun. I mean, he and Billy Barty are the comic relief, I feel like.
I feel like probably so, yeah. And definitely, yeah, it's a fun character having these songs pop up in the movie. I think it's a fun element in the movie, Nicole.
Yeah. You also have Meg Maud, who is played by Dorothy Newman. And she is one of, like, the other, like, older witches. So she seems really level-headed.
Yeah, it seems like, I don't know if she's necessarily out to get Helene or anything like that.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like.
Livia seems to be, trying to.
Well, she's out to get Helene because she wants Pendragon.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, so.
So that's the reason for the rivalry there.
Exactly.
Of course. Well, actually, at the very beginning of the movie, you have Richard Devon, the actor, popping up as Satan. And then, of course, later on in the movie, Satan returns, because that's what has to happen in the movie at some point. Isn't that right, Nicole?
That is right.
You have Roger Corman staple, Dick Miller, popping up as a leper later in the movie. But basically, this movie, certainly toward the beginning, you keep cutting back and forth from the doctor's office or the scientist's office, whatever the case may be, and then going back to the past to see Helene, and it just keeps bouncing back and forth, I feel probably due to budgetary reasons primarily. Basically, what this comes down to is Helene has a choice to make. She can either, and we won't spoil what the decision is, but she has a choice to make. You can either stay in the past and live your life out with Pendragon, or you can allow yourself to be beheaded. And then the lives, her future lives beyond this point, other lives that this kind of, I guess, person, soul, whatever the case is, inhabits, will have a chance to exist. Because if she continues on with Pendragon in the past, these other lives are gone.
Right.
Her present day life that we're introduced to at the beginning of the movie, Diana Love, may never exist. Most likely will never exist.
So what you're saying is by Diana Love going back in time, she's messed up the time continuum?
Yes, just like Back to the Future,
that's
Nicole.
Right. So she's changed.
The space-time continuum is ruined.
She's changed the past.
Yes.
So now...
changing the past, change the future. That's right. Oh my God.
So, man, that's like... this is like a prequel to Back to the Future.
This is the official prequel to Back to the Future, Nicole. The Undead from 1957. Do you remember, Nicole, when at one point, the doctor from the future, Quintus, he ends up also getting transported to the past somehow?
Right, because he's trying to help Diana come back.
Yes. He gets sent to the past, too. But just like in, Nicole, the Terminator... he goes back to the past and he is naked, Nicole.
That's right.
Except one thing, which I was like, wait a second. He gets to keep his watch? So he's in the past, naked, but he still has his watch on his arm.
That's right.
And it's not something that was an accident necessarily, unless they realized it later and they just didn't want to go back and reshoot it, which knowing Roger Corman is possible. That they were like, oh yeah, we forgot to take his watch off in that scene. And then Roger just said, oh yeah, we'll just rewrite that. And then, you know, we'll add a scene where they're talking about the watch later.
He's a wizard from the future that can stop time.
Yes, basically, yeah, they start talking about his watch at one scene later in the movie then. So, anyway, it's interesting. I enjoyed seeing that element of it. Nicole, The Undead, in classic Roger Corman fashion, was filmed in 6 days, Nicole. 6 days for this movie, and apparently the sets were built inside a converted supermarket.
Okay.
Yeah. Interesting, huh?
Yeah.
There's a cool little dance scene, choreography scene at the Witch's Sabbath.
Yeah.
That I thought was pretty amusing.
And I said for the 50s, I said that kind of, you know,
that
dance.
Kind of dancing.
I said that kind of dance in the 50s had to be pretty progressive because I didn't think contemporary dance was around then.
Yeah. You know what we got here, Nicole? Roger Corman breaking boundaries on film. That's right. Anyway, yes. Because I love Roger Corman. I love his stuff. I just love Roger Corman. Because of this, when I was watching The Undead, I had a really good time with it. It's certainly not a great movie by any means. When I was thinking about it, it's dated. It's very dated.
Yeah.
But it's also very, very charming and kind of in this kind of quaint way. It was, I had a lot of fun watching it. This is a Corman movie that I hadn't seen before. I'd never seen The Undead before. So, yeah, I thought, man, this would be a cool one to work into the festival. I wasn't expecting much also. My expectations were really low. But... yeah, I had a really good time watching The Undead. For me, I will definitely amass the movie for me personally, just because I really enjoy Roger Corman. However, as an average moviegoer, I may not necessarily recommend it to a lot of people, which may lean more towards a murder. But if you enjoy kind of like campy old 50s, 60s horror, you might have fun with this one. It was actually used at one point on Mystery Science Theater 3000 So I'm not surprised by that at all.
Yeah.
But yes, what do you think, Nicole, of the ending?
So I think the word charming, it fits it perfectly. It is charming. I feel good when I was watching it.
You felt good.
I felt good. And I thought, yeah, this is cute. And so I'm going to amass it. But I probably won't want to watch it for several years.
Yes, you'll pass on it for a while.
That's right. I'm like, it's not going to be one that I'm going to watch a lot, but I would watch it again.
Yes.
Because I did think that it was really charming.
Yeah. I feel like for me, this might be one that kind of gets added to a rotation of movies that I watch at the end of the night just to relax and kind of wind down and fall asleep. I feel like this is definitely one of those for me.
Those are your night-night movies?
My night-night movies that just make me feel good and take my mind off of something else. I could definitely see this one falling in there because, man, it just made me feel so damn good, Nicole.
Oh, it's a lullaby.
It is.
A lullaby for Craigie.
That's right, Nicole.
Unchain yourself from this world. Join Richard Garland, Pamela Duncan, Allison Hayes in the weird world of the undead. Where a witch of a wench gives free play to her unbridled passions and jealousies.
I could not tell you before, but now because I love thee, because I must help thee, I am a witch.
A witch?
I am thy match, witch.
You will make me a fine opponent.
Know the unearthly horror of untimely death. Face burial alive by the unfrocked monk who makes merry jests while burying the undead.
Jack Sprat could eat no fat, his wife could eat no lean, and so betwixt the two of them, they licked the coffin clean.
See the tortured undulations of the unwanted virgins. Experience the unbelievable.
Let's talk about a movie from 1933, Nicole.
1933? I didn't realize it was that old.
What did you think it was from, 1987?
No.
This movie, Nicole, is The Vampire Bat. And it runs 1 hour and 5 minutes. That's not very long, Nicole.
It wasn't.
According to IMDb, this is a drama, horror, mystery, romance, science fiction movie.
Well, man, just put every tagline on there.
Yeah.
You know?
Just tag it with everything, just every genre.
Just tag it with everything.
Those are all genres, Nicole.
Yes.
Yes, Craig. The movie is directed by Frank R. Strayer, and it stars Lionel Atwill as Dr. Otto von Neiman. Do they ever say his name?
I don't think they've ever said his name in
there. I don't know if they ever said his name at all.
I don't think so.
Lionel Atwill, known for being in other sort of horror films from back then. Dr. X, The Mystery of the Wax Museum, Mark of the Vampire. And after Bride of Frankenstein, pretty much all the Frankenstein sequels that followed.
Wow. He wanted the whole grouping.
He needed them all.
Yeah.
Faye Ray is also in the movie, Nicole, playing Ruth Burton. Faye Ray, Nicole, most famous for what?
King Kong.
That's correct.
Yeah.
King Kong, also The Most Dangerous Game in 1932. And she was actually in a lot more than I feel like people think because of her notoriety from King Kong.
Sure.
People think Faye Ray, they think King Kong, and that's it. But she's been in other things. And we also have Melvin Douglas, Nicole, as Carl Brettschneider. And I would always get confused during the movie when they would just walk up to him and call him Herr Brettschneider. And I kept thinking, are they calling him his first and last name, Herr Brettschneider? No, but that's his full last name, Brettschneider, Carl. And then someone finally did say Carl, and I was like, oh, so his full last name is Brettschneider. I get it.
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot of German stuff going on in this movie.
Yeah.
A lot of people with German names. Melvin Douglas, Nicole, had a very long career. He actually won Best Supporting Actor for HUD in 1963. And then another time, Best Supporting Actor, being there in 1979, Nicole. 1933 to 1979, that's a long time, Nicole.
That is.
He was in The Old Dark House way back in 1932. He was also in The Changeling in 1980, and Ghost Story was his final film in 1981. Nicole, what is the vampire bat about here?
Well, you have this small town.
A small German village.
A small German village. Seems like high superstitions.
Yes, they're very superstitious. Yeah.
So, there's a lot of bats congregating around.
Yes,
so
and these are very large bats.
Large bats. So, they're calling them vampire bats, but if anybody knows anything about vampire bats, those large bats aren't vampire bats.
Vampire bats are very small, Nicole.
So, the town's overrun with bats, and, you know, people are being drained of their blood and killed.
Yes. Something is going on where blood is drained, people are dying. And, of course, being a small German village that's very superstitious.
Yeah.
Yes, the suspect is a vampire.
That's right.
There must be a vampire on the loose.
So they're trying to pinpoint who the vampire is. And of course, they always have a scapegoat. And it's poor who, Craig?
Poor Hermann Gleibe, played by Dwight Fry. Dwight Fry, Nicole, was Renfield in Dracula from 1931.
Really?
And Fritz from Frankenstein, also 1931. So Dwight Fry, he's kind of known for playing these kind of eccentric, odd characters.
Yeah.
He kind of felt like he was typecast, actually, after performing so well as Renfield in Dracula. And he's probably right.
He is probably right. So,
and he actually died at a very young age. He had a heart condition, died of a heart attack at age 44, Nicole.
Okay.
Which is sad, but
yeah,
it was many years ago, Nicole, that he passed away. Dwight Fry, we can still enjoy him in these movies. And yes,
right.
what's going on with Herman in this movie, Nicole?
So Herman is a little different. He's odd. He likes the bat. He likes to pet them. He says they're soft like a kitty.
Yes.
And who doesn't like a little kitty?
Who doesn't like a little kitty petting the little soft, fuzzy kitty?
That's right.
She won't let it out of her sight.
A terrible experience. To be attacked by a giant bat is enough to shatter anyone's nerves.
She talks about it all the time. How it flew in her face and tried to sink its teeth in her throat.
No. Bats no do. They soft, like cat. They not bite Herman.
Keep quiet, Herman. See what you've done.
And I think one lady says that he lives by himself and he never takes a bath. But yet he's always, he's not skinny. He's eating some way.
Something. He must eat something.
That's right. So, you know, their suspicions running wild here.
That's right. They definitely, at least at one point during the movie, suspect Herman.
That's right.
And what do they do, Nicole, with this poor, simple fellow Herman?
So, basically, they run him down, and basically he gets so scared he jumps off this, like, crevice, rock crevice.
Yeah.
He jumps into it.
Yes, he does.
So he dies.
Yeah. And then, of course,
that doesn't solve their vampire problem.
No, because it keeps happening. In the movie, we also have Maude Ebern as Aunt Gussie, who is definitely the comic relief
in
the movie.
She's definitely the comic relief. She's a hypochondriac.
Constantly carrying on about something.
She definitely has everything under the sun. She shouldn't live in a doctor's household because everything she reads about, she's got it.
Absolutely, Nicole.
So an old German word that they keep saying in this movie, I always think is a funny, but everybody always refers to the Burgermeister. So,
Burgermeister Gustav, played by Lionel Bilmore, yes.
So, I had to look up what Burgermeister meant.
What is it, Nicole?
It's a like a city council official, basically.
Okay. So, a man of the people, yes.
The Burgermeister.
Uh-huh.
But it's a good word.
Burgermeister.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good when it pops up in these old movies.
I like it. And it made me kind of giggle every time I heard it.
You get the little chuckles about the Burgermeister.
I like a little the Burgermeister.
Yes. So with Herman eliminated, they then have to try to figure out what's actually going on.
And you know,
who's the vampire? Is there a vampire?
I don't even know if they felt bad about him.
No, they really didn't. I don't think they did. And it's terrible.
It is terrible.
Because they forced him to kill himself.
Yeah.
And then, of course, yes, they also, yeah, because there's the question of whether or not, you know, if he's a vampire, well, if he just threw himself off a rock precipice or something like that and landed and broke his neck or something, well, that won't kill a vampire.
But you gotta stake him and chop his head off. So someone had to climb
down
there.
Yeah, someone had to climb down and stake him. And then they made sure. And then they were like, okay, well, I guess, you know, maybe we owe him a proper burial at least. Yeah, I guess you do.
Later on.
Yeah. Ridiculous.
Anyway, it all goes back to the doctor's household.
Yes, and there's something going on inside the household of the doctor.
Absolutely.
Some sort of experiments going on within.
So, there's a locked office.
To the laboratory.
To the laboratory. So, you have the laboratory, and then you have a locked room off the laboratory. So, what do you think's going on in there, Craig?
I don't know.
Fishy stuff, right?
Yes, I would say so.
So, anyway, as the movie progresses, we find the doctor's like right-hand man.
The assistant.
Yeah.
Emil Borst, played by Robert Fraser.
So we find out Emil's been kidnapping people and bringing them to the secret laboratory.
Yes. Some very sneaky stuff going on here.
That's right. I wonder what kind of experiment this is.
I don't know. I feel like we shouldn't say any more, Nicole.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't think it should go. I don't think we should say anything.
Yes, we better leave it at that. Nicole, the vampire bat was produced by Majestic Pictures, which was kind of what they refer to as a Poverty Row studio. So the productions that they did were very inexpensive, very cheap productions. It wasn't sort of a major studio at the time, like something like Universal, for instance. So Majestic, they had to use what they could to make some of these movies. So they actually used the European village set from Frankenstein as the village here as well. And then the interior of Otto von Neumann's home is actually the interior set of the old dark house.
Really?
Yeah. Interesting.
It is interesting. I kind of like that, though. Reuse, recycle.
Yeah. That's the way to do it, Nicole.
Yeah, kind of neat.
Yes. Well, the vampire bat, Nicole, this is one that I had not seen before. And it's one that I've kind of put off watching, because I've seen, you know, ratings for it on IMDb or places like that, and it never seems to be rated that highly. And after seeing it, you know, I had a really good time watching The Vampire Bat.
You know, it's not that bad.
Yeah, it's really, actually, in my opinion, pretty good. I'd watch the hell out of this thing. I'd watch it several more times.
You know, I'd watch it again just for Aunt Gussie.
Yeah, Aunt Gussie. And I like Herman. I like Dwight Fry in this. So, and, well, Faye Wray, too. She's kind of a looker, Nicole.
She is kind of a looker.
Yes. So, yeah, the Vampire Bat, definitely for me, one that I would amass. This is definitely one I'm going to revisit. The runtime of 1 hour and 5 minutes certainly helps as well. You can just pop that in at any time and
you
watch
it. You can't beat that.
Yeah, come on. That's fantastic. The version that we saw had a restored color sequence with some, like, torches that were actually, you know, in color. Which, I guess it was fine, you know.
It was fine.
It didn't add a lot to the movie or anything. It was just kind of something to catch the eye, I guess.
Yeah.
So you too would amass the movie,
Nicole? I would amass this.
Okay. Yeah. That's good. Good to know. All right. So The Vampire Bat, definitely worth your time. This is usually pretty easy to find. It's one of those movies that is kind of in the public domain, I believe. So you should be able to watch it even on something like YouTube. It's definitely on Amazon Prime and things like that as well. So just take a look for it, and it shouldn't be that difficult to find The Vampire Bat out there on the internet to watch.
W,
Nicole, what does W stand for?
The Witches!
Yes, from 1966. This movie is NR, Nicole, not rated. It runs 1 hour. And 30 minutes. It's a horror film.
It's a horror.
Straight up, flat out horror.
Straight up horror.
Nothing else. Horror. This is horror.
Is it?
Yes. This movie is horror.
Seems like it's kind of a mystery to me.
No. This is not a mystery. This is horror. Okay, Nicole. So this is this year's festival's Hammer horror film.
Okay.
And it's kind of an oddball. This is another movie. I hadn't seen this one before. It's just one that I've never gotten around to. So, it's kind of an unusual Hammer film because it doesn't really have any of the Hammer regulars in it.
It doesn't have the players.
Yeah, the Hammer regulars really aren't there. Even some of the well-known supporting Hammer contributors are not there. The director is Cyril Frankel. He's not a Hammer director either. So this is kind of a strange one.
Craig, I've got news for you. He is a Hammer director.
He is now, after this, yes. But yeah, this is just kind of an oddball one.
What year was this from?
1966.
Okay,
Nicole.
You're talking like 1966 just happened.
That just happened yesterday.
It happened in 1966.
That feels like it was yesterday. I remember that year well, Nicole.
No, you were not born then.
The movie stars Joan Fontaine as Miss Gwen Mayfield. Joan Fontaine, Nicole, worked with Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah.
In 1940 on Rebecca. Rebecca's hot right now because there's a new Rebecca, a new version of the story.
Yeah.
Yes. What is it on? Netflix? Hulu?
Yeah, I think
Something like that. One of those things. Anyway, and then she also worked with Alfred Hitchcock again, 1941, on Suspicion. Ooh. Joan Fontaine as Miss Gwen Mayfield. As we kick the movie off, she's in Africa, and she has a very disturbing experience.
Right.
She feels somewhat threatened, I guess, by the local witch doctor. Or witch doctors, I think she says, actually, later.
I think she said just it's tribal politics and the witch doctors wanted the school shut down, basically.
She's a school teacher, yes, and she was there helping, teaching, and yes, they just wanted them gone.
They wanted them gone.
So,
scare tactics.
Yeah, scare tactics.
Doesn't sound like anybody was really hurt.
Yes.
But just a lot of scare tactics.
It definitely freaked her out, though, because this lingered with her. She was affected after returning to England because she interviews with Alec McCowan, playing the character Alan Bax. And she's talking to him, interviewing, and she almost has a breakdown during the interview.
She seems pretty nervous.
Yes.
Pretty fragile,
That's what I was going to say. Definitely a fragile character here.
Yeah.
So, what happens, though?
So, Mr. Bax hires her for the private school.
She gets the job.
She gets the job.
And it's at this small English village.
Yeah, and the town's called Hedeby.
Yes.
So, I don't know if that's a real English village or not.
I don't know, honestly.
Well, it's possibly a fictitious town in England.
It could be. Or it might be real.
Or it might be real.
Maybe people live there right now.
That's right.
Yes. The town, Nicole, does not have a church, which strikes her as odd because Mr. Bax, when the interview happens, is wearing a collar, a priest collar.
And when she approaches his home she meets his sister.
That is Stephanie Bax, played by Kay Walsh.
So Stephanie says, oh, he's not a priest.
Yeah.
He just wears that, you know.
And it's just a little odd.
It's a little different.
He also sits in kind of his own room a lot, where he listens to organ music very loudly. And also there's a lot of religious iconography in that room.
Yeah.
Yes.
So?
Yeah.
He said at one point, it just made him feel safe.
Yes. It's just his collection and makes him feel safe.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, you know, everybody's got a thing.
Yep. That's right.
That's right.
So, Miss Mayfield, Joan Fontaine, is the school teacher and takes the job at this small schoolhouse, which it must be a couple of rooms because there's at least one other teacher.
Right, right. So it seems like she has the older pupils.
Yes,
and pupils. So you get to know two of the pupils in this movie. So
one of them is Linda Rigg, played by Ingrid Bolting. And then you have Ronnie Dowsett. That character is played by Martin Stevens.
Yeah. So as the movie progresses, Ronnie and Linda, they have kind of a love for each other. You know, it's kind of an innocent love right now.
An innocent love amongst school children.
Yeah, that's right. But, you know, they're getting older.
Yes.
And some of the townswomen are looking out for Linda because they want to make sure that Linda stays untouched.
Yes, that's right.
So.
And we think that it's all just an innocence thing.
Right.
But.
At first.
Yes. As the movie progresses, as we keep saying, Nicole.
Yeah.
Ronnie has the opportunity to be sent away to go to school.
Yeah, because apparently he's a pretty good writer.
Yes.
And, they test him. And I guess he really tests out of the school.
He must have performed very well in
his right.
test.
So, Mr. Bax and Miss Mayfield think that Ronnie should go away to school, really. So they give the parents the option, of course. And it doesn't seem like the parents want Ronnie to leave the village.
That's right. So Miss Mayfield agrees to kind of take him under her wing and do her best to tutor him.
Right.
To sort of increase his educational growth.
Right.
Yes.
Like, they called it a cram school is what he'd be going to.
Yes.
So, a lot of studying.
A lot of studying. That's what cramming's all about.
That's right. So, anyway, what happens to Ronnie?
Nicole, Ronnie took ill in the night.
That's right. And the ambulance came and took him away.
Yeah.
So, Ronnie's gone.
Ronnie's out of the picture.
That's right.
That feels
convenient.
Like it could be convenient, and I'm a little suspicious about
it. Me too.
There are other instances as well. Miss Mayfield also, at one point, becomes very ill and ends up in some sort of she calls it a nursing home, to kind of recuperate as well. It seems as though she has more of a breakdown, though, I think.
Right.
Right?
So, that was awful convenient, too, because she was kind of nosing around, you know, putting things together in her mind.
Yes. And she had begun to suspect witchcraft, specifically of Granny Rigg, Linda Rigg's grandmother, obviously.
That's right.
Yes. There was a cat that was always following her around. What was the cat's name, Nicole?
With Vesper.
Yes. This cat kept following her around. And in one scene, we see Granny say to Vesper,
follow her.
Yeah. And Vesper does.
Yeah.
So. Maybe Miss Mayfield is not quite as loony as she might think she is after this situation.
But you know, she only tells one person of her suspicions of witchcraft.
Who does she tell?
Stephanie Bax.
And maybe, Nicole, without spoiling too much, that's not the best person to tell.
Maybe not.
Well, Nicole, the rest of the movie, toward the end, we get into this whole sequence of a
witch's Sabbath.
Yeah. And there's some odd choreographed dancing kind of stuff going on. But it's on the border for me. On the border of being humorous and also kind of freaky.
Yeah.
So it's right on the edge for me. I don't know what you thought.
Well, they're all dirty, for one thing.
Yes.
Like,
there's mention of an orgy at one point, Nicole.
Well, and they've been rolling around in the dirt.
Yes.
And their clothes are all ripped up. Oh, my gosh. So you have to watch it and see what you think.
Yeah, I suppose so. This movie, Nicole, is actually an origin of a sample that's used in a My Life with the Thrill Kill Cult song.
Really?
Did you catch that?
No.
And I can't remember the song offhand here immediately, but we like the band, and, you know, we've been listening to whatever this song is for years, and the sample is...
At the moment of sacrifice, let no blood be spilled!
And it's something that Miss Mayfield utters late in the movie.
That's right. She does.
So, yeah. That's interesting for us and the two of us alone, probably. But there it is. So, Nicole, what did you think of The Witches from 1966? This kind of unusual addition, as far as the cast goes, the director goes,
to Hammer Horror History. Well, I have to say that I really enjoyed it.
I did too.
And I would amass it and watch it again.
And Nicole, you know what? Just like The Vampire Bat, this is another one where I've seen for years low ratings, mediocre ratings. And man, I enjoyed the hell out of it. Well, maybe sometimes if your expectations are just low, maybe it just all works out for the best. And maybe these people are just idiots. Because this was pretty good.
I was really surprised, actually.
You thought it was going to be a pile of garbage?
I went in with no expectations of liking it.
And you know what, Nicole? It turned out pretty well for you.
It turned out pretty good. I was very invested.
Yeah. And apparently this movie did really, really poorly. And it kind of killed Joan Fontaine the rest of her career, kind of.
Really?
But I thought it was a pretty good little vehicle for her. I thought it worked pretty well. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed her performance. I thought she was just wonderful in the movie, actually.
Definitely an amass for me.
Yes. Nicole, I will also amass the movie. This is a little Hammer Horror hidden gem. Why is that so funny? What a goof. Well, we both amassed this one. So, The Witches. We just like witches.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll leave it at that. X. When you get to this letter, Nicole, you know you're getting close. You know you're getting close to finishing out the festival.
You are.
This is one of those difficult letters.
Yeah.
This movie I almost used in last year's festival, but at the last minute, Nicole, I found this James Cameron early short film that I used instead. Because, man, you gotta use whatever you can with X these days.
Yeah, you kinda gotta hoard them.
Yeah.
You know?
So now next year, I don't know what I'm gonna do for year 17 of the festival.
Oh, man. So it's blank next X for next
year. Yeah, I don't have anything lined up. I'm gonna have to do some serious digging. People need to make more movies that start with the letter X, Nicole.
Yeah.
You know how in the 90s everything was like extreme Why didn't they make a bunch of movies with extreme as the first word of the movie?
I don't know.
Like, extreme ghosts or extreme hillbilly killers. Something like
and
that.
And they have to spell it with an X. Oh, yeah. Not an E.
Yeah, you can't. No, I know. But, yes. I'm saying in the 90s, you would have spelled it just with a flat-out X.
Yeah.
Because that is extreme, Nicole.
It's extreme.
Yes. So, what movie do we have here for this year's X, Nicole?
X-Files 2?
Yes, the X-Files 2!
I but want to really... believe.
Yes, X-Files, the X-Files, I want to believe, you're correct. Now, I was thinking during the movie, is this X-Files 2? Or do you have to count the show? Is the show X-Files 1, then the first X-Files movie, X-Files 2, and this technically 3? And then that later reboot series where they made like a few episodes, 8 to 10 episodes or something, is that X-Files 4?
Oh, geez. I think
or do you count every episode of the X-Files, every single episode as X-Files, you know, 1, 2, 3 to like 200?
I think you've wasted too much time thinking about it.
I spent too much time thinking about this nonsense. So when we were talking about what movie we were going to talk about first here in this recording session, you said what, Nicole? You said
Mulder and Scully reunite.
Yes, that's what you said, and I got a kick out of it. So, yes, Nicole, we have David Duchovny as Fox, and we have Gillian Anderson as Dana. They never call each other by their first names, though.
They never say
they
that.
They always say like, Mulder and Scully. That's all they ever say. The name, I don't know if the name Dana is said at all in this movie.
I don't think so. She goes by Dr. Scully.
Yes. But I don't think anyone calls her Dana. Now, I don't think it happens once.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Now, at least one person calls Mulder Fox. At least one.
Yeah.
I hear it at least one time. Anyway, Nicole, enough of that nonsense. Okay, whatever. Fox and Dana... up to their old shenanigans here.
That's right.
In the X-Files, I want to believe. This movie is from July 25th, 2008. That was the original U.S. release date, Nicole.
Okay.
It's rated PG-13. It runs 1 hour and 44 minutes. Nicole, according to IMDb, this is not any sort of romance. However, it is a crime, drama, horror, mystery, sci-fi movie.
Okay.
Why didn't you put romance in there, too? They could have put romance in there.
It, you know, they had a little romance.
There's a little bit of romance.
I guess.
This is directed by X-Files creator Chris Carter. The movie, Nicole, has a approximate budget of $30 million. Whoa.
Wow.
It is, you know, a nice-looking movie, but, geez, it's quite a bit of money. And as a result of all that money, it didn't do that well at the box office domestically. It opened with a $10 million take on its opening weekend on 3,185 screens, opening at number 4. Domestically, though, a little bit of a bust. It made $21 million domestically. However, the worldwide take was $69 million, so that's a little better. When you take that into account, I suppose.
Yeah.
At this point, do you think, Nicole, maybe the X-Files was just played out? Like it was spaced out too long in between movies? It had been separated too far from the show, do you think?
Yeah, maybe the people that really watched the show religiously were at a different time in their life, you know?
Or maybe those people still went to see it, but those were like the only people that went to see it.
Maybe. Who knows?
Could be. Anyway... so, what is this movie all about, Nicole?
Well, basically, the FBI reaches out to Dr. Scully, and
yes.
She works in a hospital.
Not Dana.
Yeah, Dr. Scully. So, they reach out to her because they're trying to get in touch with...
Fox Mulder?
Fox Mulder. And, of course, Dana Scully says, I don't work with him anymore.
Yes.
But she goes home to him. So.
Yeah, because she knows exactly where he lives.
Yeah, exactly. So she brings him in And he said he's not going unless she goes too, of course. So they both go to the FBI. They're wanting to prove that this psychic, Father Joe...
Father Joe, played by Billy Connolly.
Yeah, is a real psychic, and they're trying to locate a missing FBI agent.
Yes. And Father Joe has a bit of a nasty past.
Yeah, checkered past.
Yes. He's apparently I suppose a convicted pedophile.
Yeah. Excommunicated.
Yes. And he lives in this kind of strange, secluded
pedophile
convent.
City?
Yeah, it's like a pedophile city where they all have this kind of checkered past, as you said. A nasty history.
They're not all pedophiles.
Are they not all pedophiles?
Convicted sex offenders.
Okay. All convicted sex offenders. Okay.
So I guess that could mean anything.
Well, that could mean anything.
Yeah.
Relating to offenses regarding sex.
Yes.
Yes. Anyway, so, yes, they go get him out of this place, and he's basically showing them the sights. This is where this happened, psychically, right? They're kind of riding around in the areas where they know these crimes have happened. And yes, he's kind of pointing out areas, pointing out details as best he can, using these psychic powers.
Right. And I guess it's Mulder's job to prove or disprove that he's not a true psychic.
Yes, exactly. Meanwhile, you have sort of a subplot involving Dana Scully at the hospital trying to care for this young boy. And she's having this whole moral dilemma about sort of radical experimental treatments, things of that nature that could be used possibly to help this child.
Right. He's a terminal patient, and if they do nothing, he will die. So it's kind of it's a last-ditch effort that could work or could not. So,
yes.
Truthfully, they've got nothing to lose but it putting the child through the pain of the procedures.
Right, exactly. And basically, in her research, she finds that there was some research done in Russia that she's interested in trying on this boy. But at the same time that she's finding these details about that, she finds some other information that becomes useful later in the story. So, Father Joe, leading them around, basically what we have here, it turns out to be a situation where there's some human trafficking going on for organs.
Right.
Is what it kind of boils down to. You have Callum Keith Rennie playing one of the traffickers, one of these organ traffickers. He's listed in the credits as the second abductor, but he's the primary kind of villain in this that keeps kind of popping up.
Yeah.
And apparently, someone that he's associated with has sort of a history with Father Joe as possibly one of Father Joe's victims in the past. So there's some speculation then on the FBI's part, on Fox Mulder's part, Dana Scully's part, that Father Joe is somehow in cahoots with this, and that's why he knows these details, not because he's actually psychic. As things continue in the story, Dana, with this research that she saw earlier, saw some details on the Russian group doing some wild experiments with parts, organic parts of humans, possibly. But primarily what she sees is dogs. There's an experiment on a dog, making a dog two-headed, essentially.
Yeah, there's a lot of it. It was basically to extend the life of a person short term until they can gather more of the organs.
That required organs.
Yeah, that required organs. So,
but due to this kind of wild experimental procedures that they've been doing, she ends up tying the things together and it becomes kind of a nasty little twisted piece toward the end with some heads being dismembered, attached to other bodies, things like that.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
So it's pretty, that's pretty yucky, actually. So
it's a little weird. It's, yeah, a little weird.
Disturbing.
Yes. So I don't necessarily think that we have to say a whole lot more. Mm-hmm. We have Amanda Peet as one of the FBI agents, Dakota Whitney. We have, I'm not sure, because I'm not hip enough, Nicole, I'm not sure if he pronounces his name Exhibit or Zibit, plays another FBI agent, Drummy. And these are recurring characters that keep popping up in the movie as the FBI agents. Amanda Peet's character seems to be a little bit more interested and invested, whereas Drummy seems to be totally kind of against this whole Father Joe psychic experiment thing. He doesn't buy it.
Yeah, he's against it. He's against, I think, Mulder and Scully even, like, talking to them, I think.
Yeah, too. I think he's just against any of them being involved, really.
Yeah.
So, the X-Files, I want to believe, Nicole, as I was watching this, I was trying to remember the other X-Files movie, kind of put them up head-to-head. That one, the first one, I think is more alien related.
Yeah.
The second one is definitely more along the lines of, yes, a more like a crime mystery kind of movie with spooky, nasty elements.
Right. So.
So I don't know which one I prefer. I don't know. Maybe it just depends on my mood. The last time I watched the alien related X-Files movie, the first X-Files movie, I don't know. I wasn't that crazy about it. This one, I felt kind of invested in it. But then at the end, I just sort of felt a little bit empty. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Did I really care that much? I don't know.
So, I'm going to say I didn't care. And I'm gonna murder it. Because I'm like, I saw it once. And I probably don't have to watch it again.
Yeah, I think I kind of feel the same way. I'd probably murder this one too. Noah Massin here on the X-Files, I want to believe.
Nope.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, yes, I saw it once. The only reason I would ever need to see it again is for the sake of emergency. If I needed to reuse this as another X movie somewhere down the line because there aren't enough X movies.
Surely we can find you something.
Yeah, I would definitely go with some other ones again before this, that's for sure. It's okay. If you like the X-Files, maybe. You know, I like the X-Files, but I'm not like a rabid fan.
Yeah, but for the sake of saying you've seen the whole collection.
Yes. I think, yes, if you want to include it in that way, that's fine. But overall, I don't think it's necessary to revisit.
Why?
Kevin Bacon, Nicole. What about Kevin Bacon? You know that game where you can connect Kevin Bacon? You can use Kevin Bacon to connect other people. Everyone's connected somehow via Kevin Bacon.
Sure. Who hasn't heard of that game, Craig?
Who hasn't heard of that, Craig? What are you? From 1982 or something?
Oh, Craig.
Anyway, Kevin Bacon. I don't know. I feel like I always kind of have a little bit of a soft spot for Kevin Bacon. I like seeing him in movies, I guess. Yeah. Is that weird?
No.
You're fine with that, too?
Everybody loves some Tremors.
Everybody loves some Tremors. What about Footloose, Nicole?
Footloose? Everybody loves Footloose.
Okay. All right. So, Kevin Bacon, I shouldn't feel bad about having a soft spot for Kevin Bacon. Okay. So Kevin Bacon is in this movie that we're going to talk about next, Nicole. That's why I brought up Kevin Bacon. Does that make sense now?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so this movie, Nicole, is called You Should Have Left.
You Should Have Left.
This movie, Nicole, is from 2020.
Wow.
This is a new movie, Nicole.
This is a new movie.
It's rated R. It runs 1 hour and 33 minutes. I don't know if this had a theatrical release in this weird year of 2020. I don't think so. I think it was a digital-only release. So home video, Nicole. Home video.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of stuff didn't release.
Available for rent or purchase via streaming services, Nicole.
Yes.
Yes. On IMDb, Nicole, this is listed as a drama, horror, mystery. Lots of drama. Definitely some mystery. Some horror, too.
Yeah.
That's fitting.
There's some spooky stuff.
Mm-hmm. This movie had an approximate budget of $4 million, Nicole.
Okay.
Kind of limited on locations, right?
Yeah.
So, that helps. That helps in not spending a lot of money.
You know, and helps. There wasn't a lot of actors.
Yeah.
You know, in the movie.
The cast is pretty small. Basically, we have three main characters, and then we have some other minor supporting characters that pop in occasionally. Kevin Bacon plays Theo. Amanda Seyfried plays Susanna, returning from Jennifer's body earlier in the festival. And then you have Avery Tew Essex playing the daughter character, Ella. What's going on in this movie, Nicole?
So you have a family. So they want to get away, I think, from the hustle and bustle. Amanda Seyfried's character,
Susanna.
She's an actress, and Kevin Bacon's character, Theo. He is a retired banker.
Yes.
So they have a young daughter, and they just want to get away. So they rent a home in Wales.
You know what it is, Nicole? An Airbnb.
That's right.
They went
to Airbnb.
Ooh, Airbnb time. Yeah. That's current day stuff right there, Nicole. This is the present day we're talking about right here.
That's right.
So Kevin Bacon's character, yes, he has a bit of a history, Nicole. He
was married previously.
Married previously. This rich banking guy. And apparently accused of murdering his wife in the bathtub via an overdose.
Right, okay.
But it went to trial, and it was very publicized, and he got off. He got off.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Well, and I believe she overdosed, and then she drowned in the bathtub.
Yes, like, that's what
I mean. She fell asleep and drowned. So, yeah.
That's exactly what I meant, actually. So, yes, Nicole, thank you for clearing that up. I'm sorry that I didn't explain it properly.
You know what?
I'm kidding. So, Susanna, she's a lot younger than Theo. And I feel like, because of his history, Kevin Bacon's character Theo has a lot of anxiety. He thinks that people are always recognizing him and always know who he is, regardless of where he goes. He keeps saying,
he recognized me. And he wants her to, put the Airbnb under her name, not his name, and things like that. Little things like that, because he doesn't want to be recognized. He doesn't want that notoriety.
Yes, he doesn't want to deal with this history any longer.
Right.
He wants to put this past in the past and keep it there, Nicole.
That's right.
But yes, I think there's also, because she's a lot younger than he is, because she's this actress, there's a scene where he goes to a set and she has to have a love scene on set, and he seems a little disturbed by this. He just has some confidence issues, I think.
Sure. And you know, an older guy, maybe, that's part of his, self-confidence.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about there. You got it. Yeah, you know what I'm saying. So, is Ella their child?
Yes.
Okay, so he's not a stepfather.
No.
I never really quite knew for sure about that.
They never said any difference.
Okay.
They never said.
All right.
And she always called him,
Yeah.
Her dad.
I know. I understand. But, yeah, I don't know. I was never really 100% certain of that, I guess. So, yes, they put the Airbnb under her name. They go to Wales. That's where this is, in Wales, as you said. They go to a small little town in Wales to buy some groceries, some supplies. And the people are all a little odd. And there aren't that many of them. We see, maybe two, the shopkeeper and one other woman outside. And, we're not introduced to a lot of people in the town or anything like that.
And they just seem to say some strange comments.
Yeah.
They're
a little weird about where they're staying.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little weird. So the house, when they enter it, it's very minimalistic, I would say. Very minimalistic. A lot of just the same neutral color. And a lot of twisting hallways.
Yeah. This seemed to kind of wrap around
Yeah.
around the entire building.
They seem to like it. They seem to think it's great and when they first get there.
Yeah, at first.
At first.
But then, things start to get a little weird.
Yeah.
Kevin Bacon has what might be classified as delusions or something like that. Gets caught in a room of the house.
And loses time.
Loses time. Amanda Seyfried's Susanna character has gone to bed. And we see the clock that says like 10:30 or something like that when he leaves the room. He comes back into the room to go to sleep. And he thinks that only a few moments have passed.
Yeah, and it's like and it's 3 like, o'clock.
Yeah, hours have passed. When he's in this other room, there are 3 columns of shelves. But at one point, he has this kind of, I don't know if it's a waking dream, I don't know what it is. The middle column of shelves is suddenly gone, and there's a doorway there. So, of course, he goes down into the doorway, goes down the stairwell, and there's this whole other weird area underground of the house. It's very dark, very damp, and he has this vision of, I believe it's his daughter down there, and she's been attacked or assaulted or something. And then he snaps out of it. He wakes up and he snaps out of it.
Yeah. And then, like, he leaves himself little clues. Like, he writes in his journal, you know?
Journal, I know that.
He writes in his journal.
He keeps a journal.
Yeah, he keeps a journal. But, so, when he's looking through his journal, in present time, he sees these little notes. And he's like, I didn't write this. What's going on?
Where did this come from?
And it's his future self that went and saw him in the past. I mean, it's very convoluted for me talking about it. So you're just going to have to watch it.
But yes, the house has a lot of bizarre winding paths and things like that. However, it gets to a point later where Susanna has left. We're not going to say why. Susanna has left the house. Theo and Ella are there together, and they're kind of exploring things, but they get separated because the house doesn't interconnect like it used to. Things start to change within the house, and suddenly Ella's just lost in the house calling out for him, and he can't find her because things are all wrong.
Things are wrong. He can kind of hear her at certain points. He
calling out for her.
Kind of hear for her him. Calling. Yeah. Yes. So, I thought it was a pretty interesting movie.
It is an interesting movie. At one point, the shopkeeper gives him a
triangle.
Yes, a triangle to measure the angles. And he says something like that.
The angles check the off, angles. You know, in his Welsh accent, which I, of course, cannot do. But the angles are off.
That's okay, Nicole, if you can't do it. It's okay. Sorry. But, yes, he does try it. And, yeah, sure enough, like, one of them, like, it's not a right angle. Like, it's weird. And they also measure, with a tape measure, the length inside versus the length outside. And it doesn't match up.
It's bigger on the inside.
Yes.
You know, kind of like the TARDIS, you guys.
Just like the TARDIS, Nicole. Anyway, yes. So, this is a new movie. We don't want to spoil too much, say too much about it. But, things get a little creepy. There's some creepy moments, certainly. Toward the end, there's a revelation, a shocking revelation, Nicole. Well, I guess there are multiple twists.
Multiple twists.
And multiple shocking revelations, really.
Yeah.
Anyway, you should have left, like we said, from this year, 2020. This movie, Nicole, is based on a novel by Daniel Kelman, and the novel is of the same name. This, I believe the novel came out in 2016, if I remember correctly. Also, though, it reminds me of the book House of Leaves, because that, too, is a book about a house that is oddly bigger on the inside. So I feel like, and one of the comments I've read is it's kind of like that novel, You Should Have Left, is kind of like House of Leaves light, or sort of like a cousin to House of Leaves, I guess. The writer-director of this movie is David Koepp. I'm not sure how his name is pronounced, honestly. K-O-E-P-P, Nicole. He has been around for years. He also wrote and directed Stir of Echoes, Nicole, also starring Kevin Bacon. Mm-hmm. And Secret Window in 2004, starring Johnny Depp. But he's mostly known not as a director, mostly known as a writer, a film writer, a screenwriter, Nicole. He wrote Toy Soldiers in 1991, Death Becomes Her in 1992, Jurassic Park in 1993, Mission Impossible in 96, The Lost World, which is the sequel to Jurassic Park, Nicole, in 1997, Panic Room in 2002, Spider-Man in 2002, and Tom Cruise starring in Tom Cruise's version of The Mummy in 2017. Anyway, so he's done a lot of big kind of movies.
Yeah, big, well-known
blockbusters,
stuff.
Nicole. Yeah. Blockbusters. So, Nicole, you should have left. What did you think of this one?
I'm going to mess it.
Yeah, I felt like you had a pretty good time watching
this. I feel like
one.
I had a pretty good time. I feel like I want to see it again. Maybe I would, get a little bit more out of it.
Yeah, maybe certain elements would fit together differently the second time you watch it, much like the house fits together differently.
Yeah.
On any occasion it chooses, apparently.
I do feel like it's a slow burn.
A little bit of a slow burn. Yes.
A little bit of a slow burn.
Yeah. I feel like the performances were pretty solid. I was impressed by the child actor who plays Ella, Avery Tew Essex.
Mm-hmm.
I thought she was very good in the movie, actually. Yeah. A lot of times, you know, the kids...
You're not impressed by child actors.
They get on your nerves a little bit. This character, the actor was pretty good. She was pretty solid.
Okay.
I, too, Nicole, would have masked the movie.
All right.
But maybe not quite as highly as you. I enjoyed it, but I didn't think it was perfect or anything. It was okay.
No.
But I'd probably give it another watch to see what I thought of it on a second viewing. But it was pretty good.
Z.
All right, Nicole, this is it. The big moment that you've been waiting for,
this
Nicole.
This is the big reveal?
This is it, the big reveal.
Well, not really. It's just another letter in the alphabet.
Just another letter in the alphabet, Craig. This doesn't count any differently than any of the other ones do. Except for that this is the last one, Nicole. This is the letter Z. Zed, Nicole. This is it.
Zed.
I went to the UK and I became British. Zed.
You don't have an accent.
No. I have a Midwestern accent.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Z, Nicole, is known by multiple titles. However, we're using apparently the Pakistani title, Zinda Lash. This is from 1967, Nicole. July 7th, 1967, apparently, is when it was released in Pakistan. It runs 1 hour and 43 minutes, Nicole. It is also known as, fittingly, Dracula in Pakistan. And also, The Living Corpse. Nicole, according to IMDb, this is not only a horror film, it's also a drama, and it's also a crime movie? Where does that fit in here, Nicole? Crime?
There's murder.
Yeah, but...
Murder is a crime, Craig.
Look, okay.
Murder is a crime.
Let me ask you a question, Nicole. Are you ready for a question?
Uh-huh.
Here it comes. This movie, according to the credits, its own credits, is based on Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yeah.
So... that means every other version of Dracula, every movie Dracula based on Bram Stoker's novel is also a crime movie. Come on, Nicole, give me a break.
I guess those were just mislabeled.
IMDb, they're always stretching it. They really get on my nerves. Anyway, so...
Well, why are you reading it so much then?
I don't know.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
This is directed by, and we're doing our best with the pronunciations of the names here, Khwaja Sarfraz.
Oh, you're going to butcher like every single name here.
Yes. So, in the movie, Nicole, the Dracula character is essentially Professor Tabani, played by Rayhan, just one name, Rayhan, like Madonna, Rayhan. So, what does he do at the beginning of this movie, Nicole?
So, he's a professor, and he's trying to find, you know, an elixir that extends life, you know, through science.
Yes. So, an elixir that I guess is supposed to give him eternal life?
Yeah.
Is what I think he's shooting
exactly.
for, right?
So, yeah. Exactly. So, he tests it on himself.
Yeah, he just downs that sucker.
He just downs it.
And here was my problem. He pours it from one, like, beaker into another one. And I said, why couldn't you have just drank it out of the first
one?
Now
you got two dirty
ones. You got two dirty ones. And it doesn't matter because he freaks out. He collapses. He's in horrible pain. And he dies.
Yeah, well, I guess he didn't have to watch either one, but somebody did.
Somebody had to do it, probably. Yes. So then, he's taken, placed in a coffin, but what happens, Nicole?
He comes back.
In true Dracula fashion, he returns.
He does.
With fangs, as a vampire, Nicole.
Yep.
Oh my gosh, Professor Tabani, what have you done?
So, yeah, he starts his killing pretty much right away.
His reign of terror.
Yeah.
And basically, it starts out in a very Dracula fashion. You have a character arriving at the home. He enters the home, and he finds Dracula, Professor Tabani.
That's right. And what I thought about this was it's so funny. So, this man, he enters Dracula's house.
But not Dracula, Tabani.
Tabani, Dr. Tabani. He enters the house uninvited. I mean, Dr. Tabani doesn't know he's coming.
Yeah.
And he has a suitcase with him. And it's just understood that he wanted to see the house and he came to stay.
And he's just going to stay there.
So Dr. Tabani's like, let me show you to your room.
Okay. Yeah. You want to stay here? Sounds good to me.
I think I'm going to go to the neighbors with my suitcase and just go on in.
Yeah, just walk on in. Here I am. I'm staying here for the night.
Where's my room?
Yep. Oh, yeah. Well, it's just understood that they'll put you up for the night.
I guess exactly. So.
Yeah.
So the person who comes to visit, his name's Dr. Akil.
Dr. Akil, played by Asad Bukhari.
So, Dr. Akil is basically the Harker character.
The Harker character, yeah.
Yeah, the
in
Harker
fact,
character.
In, like, most of the credits that I've seen, he's listed as Dr. Akil Harker. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, he just shows up out of the blue. I couldn't get past that.
Couldn't get it out of my head.
I couldn't get it out of my head.
Yeah. But we have, yeah, we've got some other characters. Diba Begum plays Shabnam, who you said equated to the Mina
character. Sure.
Right? Yeah.
So Shabnam and Dr. Akil are engaged.
Engaged to be married.
Are engaged to be married, yeah.
Okay. And we see Shabnam with some of her friends, some of her lady friends. And what happens numerous times during the movie, Nicole? Not always her, but there are multiple sequences.
So there are multiple dance and song sequences here.
Yes.
And so it really reminds me of, like, Bollywood. Mm-hmm. Like a Bollywood movie. But I don't know enough about Pakistani and about Bollywood movies to
say. Pakistani cinema versus, yes, like Indian cinema.
I'm equating it to the same, around the same thing.
Yes.
I don't
geographically,
know.
Geographically, they're very close together. Yeah. So I guess it would make some sense, but.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I don't know about either one enough to be knowledgeable about it. But, you know, the song and dance sequence of the women only, though. There's never the men singing and dancing in this movie.
No. Yeah. And a couple of the dances, you said that they were supposed to be suggestive to some degree.
Yeah, like,
or somewhat, you know, the characters were supposed to be somewhat alluring. Yeah. But maybe for you, it didn't really come off that way.
For me, it came off a little awkward.
Yes.
And I don't know.
That's a good way.
I don't know.
Good way to describe some of them.
If I just wasn't understanding the allure,
yes,
or if the dancer was really that bad.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Or, yes, it could just be a cultural divide. Yes, that could be, yeah, part of it as well. I really enjoyed the later song and dance sequence where, with like the
all
large
the
group of women kind of on like a, were they next to a river or
yeah,
like an ocean or something?
I don't know.
I found myself smiling a lot during that. I really had a good time.
You liked
that.
All the dancing, you know, ladies.
I
like
the dancing ladies. I mean, I like musicals, so I guess it makes sense. I was pleasantly surprised to find this musical number within Zindalash.
Yeah.
I was just very surprised. Within Dracula, we have this musical number.
Well, and I agree. Like, during that particular song and dance sequence, I did start singing this, like, one little part. And, you know, it was funny because it's just, they have such high voices.
Yes.
And this one part really stuck out for me.
Yeah. It was pretty cute, Nicole. Pretty cute little segment. It's good stuff. But yeah, so basically, there are differences between this movie and Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Oh, absolutely.
Certainly.
Oh, absolutely.
A lot of times in some of the reading that I've done about this movie, a lot of people say that there are scenes that seem to be kind of ripped directly from Hammer's Horror of Dracula, starring Christopher Lee. And I feel like maybe you can see that. But I don't think that that's necessarily something as a negative for this movie. I feel like this movie can still be enjoyed for what it is. Even the main character, I think, somewhat resembles Christopher Lee as...
I do, too.
As Dracula? Yeah,
I do.
I really do.
I really,
yeah.
I saw that. And when I was looking at his costuming, I noticed that they had, done his hair exactly like Christopher Lee, and he even had like, and I don't think that was his real hair. I think it was like a wig. So they had definitely done some piece work on his costuming.
Yes, I think you're right.
To make him look more.
And not to spoil things too much, but even the ending is very, very similar, like shot wise is nearly identical in some ways.
Yeah.
Although, honestly, and this one is a few years later, I think maybe the special effects in this one might be a little bit better, honestly,
really?
Than the Hammer one, yeah. But anyway, you mentioned this during the movie when you were looking some stuff up. You said that in your reading, Nicole, your research, you found that this was apparently the first X-rated film in Pakistan, the equivalent at least of an X rating in Pakistan.
Yeah.
And basically, at one point, yeah, it may not have gotten released. There was a lot of sort of concern about it being too vulgar, too provocative. Early on, the dance sequences were actually removed from the movie for screenings because they were too sexually provocative. So, yeah, interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah. Pakistan in 1967, Nicole.
Yeah. Well, and that's exactly what I called it, Pakistani Dracula from the 60s.
Yes, that's right. Well, I can't say that I've seen a lot of Pakistani cinema. So, when I was looking for Z's for this year's mm-hmm. festival, and I saw this as an option, as something other than, like, yet another zombie movie, Nicole, I thought, man, this seems like it'd be kind of a cool choice. So, we went with it, and I enjoyed it. I certainly enjoyed that song and dance number, like I said, Nicole.
Yeah.
But
I really
had a pretty good time watching it.
I think there should be more horror musicals.
Yes. We need more horror
like
musicals.
I remember watching a horror musical with Neil Patrick Harris. Do you remember that?
Is it the Dr. Horrible?
Yeah.
Movie?
Yeah. Yeah. So I remember that, and I think there should absolutely be more song and dance.
I've heard of another one, and it's called The Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Well,
have you ever
yes,
heard of that one?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Okay. You have heard of that one.
I have heard.
There are some other ones, too.
I've probably danced that dance.
Oh, have you, Nicole? Yeah. But yes, Okay, so more horror musicals. We're putting out the call, Nicole.
That's right.
Filmmakers, more horror musicals.
I would watch them.
Yeah, me too. But yes, there are some other ones. Okay, high five, yes. There are some other ones out there. I just don't recall them at the moment. Most of the ones I've seen are a little underwhelming.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say that this is necessarily...
So the call is for good horror musicals.
Yes, good horror musicals. I wouldn't necessarily say that Zinda Lodge is a horror musical. It's got, you know, a few little sequences.
Like,
really only the one song and dance number, I think. There's another one where a band is performing and a woman is dancing.
Yeah.
And there's another sequence where I think there's just a woman dancing. So maybe three dance sequences altogether, two of them kind of with singing.
Yeah.
But yes, a la mass Zinda Lodge. I thought it was interesting, a different take on the Dracula story, kind of, you know, from a different culture. I enjoyed it. I thought it was an interesting watch. I feel like the direction and the cinematography was actually really nice sometimes, especially in Dracula's house, Professor Tabani's house. A lot of use of lighting and shadow in some sequences. There's some of these sequences where they're coming down a set of stairs, and yeah, there's a lot of shadows on faces and things like that. I feel like, yeah, the lighting was really, really well done in this movie, especially in that setting, in that house. It seemed to work really well. What say you, Nicole? Would you want to amass this movie, or you want to throw it down the toilet?
I'm going to amass it because, yeah, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed watching. I think this is my first movie from Pakistan. I enjoyed it a lot. And, you know, it was helpful that it was a story I know. So I could relate a little bit more. And, yeah.
Perhaps, Nicole, an easy introduction into Pakistani cinema.
That's right, Craig.
Yes.
Terror is a man! Just because I'm being funny.
That's got nothing to do with this.
I know.
If you want to watch Terror as a Man, we can watch it.
I don't want to watch that.
We can watch it.
No.
I don't want to watch it. No. The 16th annual A to Z of Horror Festival, Nicole, has ended. It is officially over.
Aww.
You've survived, Nicole. Nicole, you watched 25 out of 26 movies.
Yeah.
Now, the only one you missed was Killer Crocodile.
Yeah, I'm...
Do you have any regrets about that?
Missing
that one because you could have done the full 26?
I have no regrets, Craig.
That is ridiculous, Nicole. I can't believe you wouldn't just watch that one other movie just to complete the run. I feel like this is just you being stubborn. A case of Nicole being stubborn. And look how funny you think it is. Shame on you. All right, so before we get into other things, Nicole, let's talk about this final batch of movies.
Okay.
And I want you to choose your favorite out of this batch, okay?
Okay.
So we have, Nicole, Tales from the Hood, the horror anthology with stories based around police corruption, domestic abuse, institutional racism, and gang violence.
Oh.
And then we have The Undead, Nicole, the Roger Corman movie from 1957, which you described at one point as time-traveling witch. Then, Nicole, we had The Vampire Bat, where Herman likes to pet bats because they're soft, like kittens. And then we have The Witches, with an actual cat in that one named Vesper, Nicole.
That's right.
We also have The X-Files, I Want to Believe, which is Fox and Dana. Then you have You Should Have Left, which is a movie starring Kevin Bacon. And then, Nicole, we had Zinda Lodge, Dracula in Pakistan. So out of those seven movies to wrap up this final chapter of the festival, Nicole, which is your favorite?
Oh, okay. I think I have it narrowed down to two. Do you want to know the two? I liked The Witches quite a bit. And I did like the Kevin Bacon one.
So those two, The Witches And you should have left.
And you should have left.
Okay. I feel like this is, it's tough. This is a tough one for me. I enjoyed several of these. Specifically, I think for me, it was the kind of grouping in the middle there with the undead, the vampire bat, and the witches. It's hard, Nicole.
Yeah.
The Undead is not a very good movie as far as the production goes.
But the story is good.
But like I said, it was quaint and charming.
Yeah.
The Vampire Bat and the Witches.
Witches.
They're both good. If, like I said in the last episode, I think, if someone's going to push you down the stairs and you had to make a choice, maybe I'll go with the Vampire Bat from 1933.
Now who's being stubborn now?
Who's being stubborn, Craig? Okay, well, now, Nicole, if you had to choose a victor, your favorite movie, because I love doing this kind of thing to torture you.
You do, and you like to spring it on me.
From the entire festival, Nicole, I'll try to break this down into the groupings for you. I think that out of the first batch, you said that you preferred Elvira?
Yeah.
Hellraiser was on its own as a watch-along.
Yeah.
From the next batch, Misery, I believe, was your choice. From part three, I believe you said Pulse was your favorite. And then from this final chapter, Nicole, I forgot what you said. Did you come up with a definitive answer? I think you waffled.
I did waffle, and I did not come up with a definitive answer.
Well, you should have done it. Shame on you.
So every time you said my favorite pick, I'm like, oh, I liked that one. And then the next time you said my favorite pick, I'm like, oh, I liked that one. So I waffled within myself right then.
Ridiculous.
But I think I'm going to go with overall winner is Misery.
Misery,
because
okay.
I think it had everything.
That just had everything Nicole lacks in it. That had everything.
I think it did.
Specifically, Kathy Bates.
You know, she was really good, Craig.
She was really good. You're right. For me, I don't remember what I chose out of the batches. I think maybe I said The Fly for the first one. Then for the next one, I went with The Living Dead at Manchester Morgue. I also went with Pulse from part three. And then from the final chapter here, I was pressured into choosing The Witches, but I chose The Vampire Bat instead. So, but for me, it does have its own episode. So I feel like for me, it must be Hellraiser. That must be an easy choice. I'll just say, hey, we did a watch-along for it. Something I wanted to do. So, it's got to be Hellraiser.
You had to go.
But Misery is very good. Some of those other movies are very good. Pulse is also very solid.
Yeah.
The Living Dead at Manchester Morgue I really enjoyed too. It's a bit of a mixed bag this year. Some of them were good and some of them were a little disappointing. We did murder a lot more, I think, than we do sometimes.
You know, we're running out of space.
So you gotta murder some stuff.
So you gotta murder some stuff.
Yes. Well, all right, Nicole. So you went with Misery. I'm going with Hellraiser, cheating, using it as a by default. So, I don't know. I feel like those are both pretty good choices for a 16th annual A to Z of Horror Festival.
Horror.
Now, Nicole, at the end of the month, we always try to do some bonus features. Well, we've already, I mean.
It's not the end of the month.
I know. It's not. We're not done yet. But you're a maniac. So, like, even when, you know, even working full-time.
I work a lot of hours.
Working full-time and watching all of these movies, missing only Killer Crocodile, you still watched a ton of other things because you're nuts.
And I watched a couple of series too.
Yeah, and that's the thing. That's what makes you insane.
Yeah. So far, it's the 28th. I've watched 7 additional movies and 4 series.
Okay, yes, 4 series as well. Nicole, do you want to name them? You want to say what they are?
You know,
you want to pick a couple and say what they are instead of being so secret about it?
Yeah, I'll say some. So, one that I really kind of was interested in is this series called The School Nurse Files.
Oh, yeah?
It's really entertaining.
You really had a good time
with that. I had a good time with that. I did rewatch The Witcher.
Is that horror?
Come on, it's horror fantasy.
Okay.
It's gotta be. And then I watched Paranorman, The Nightmare Before Christmas, and I did see Hubie Halloween.
Starring Adam Sandler in a new Netflix movie.
I watched Vampires vs. the Bronx, and I've been watching Hellstrom in addition to my series watching. So I'm not done with that yet, but soon.
Soon, Nicole. Soon.
Oh, and I watched this newer movie called Scare Me.
Yeah, we just watched it last night, Nicole. It's a Shudder exclusive currently, so we watched it on Shudder. It was pretty good, I guess.
I thought it was entertaining. I like the idea of basically there were four actors in the whole movie, and their budget couldn't have been that much. I mean, they just looked like they had a set or rented a cabin, and they acted out the stories between the three of them. So, it's pretty entertaining.
Yeah, it was a little bit different. The ending, I have to say, I didn't really know what they were going to do with the ending. So, I guess maybe that's good.
Yeah.
But yeah, we both thought that was pretty good.
What are some of the extras you've been watching?
Well, I haven't watched nearly as much as you. I think I said earlier in a past episode that I had watched Equinox and Die, Monster, Die. I've added a few things since then. I don't know if I can remember them all. I watched Cabin Fever, the Eli Roth movie that has already been remade, but I watched the original Cabin Fever. Then...
Is that the one where the tooth infects the water?
No, there's not a tooth. Water is infected, but it's not by a tooth. There's a dead body that infects the water.
Something to do with the tooth and the dead body?
You probably remember something with a tooth because... You're weird about teeth.
Maybe.
But, I don't remember if there's something with a tooth. See, that, it didn't, whatever it was with a tooth didn't even affect me.
Yeah.
But.
I think I'm always scarred by tooth-related horror.
Yes. Tooth-related horror is very scary for Nicole. But, yeah, it's okay. It's a movie that I don't watch that often. I hadn't seen it for a number of years, a pretty long time. It is humorous in a dark way at points, which I do appreciate. But some of the, because it's this movie about, infection and getting infected by this contaminated water and then blood and, your skin's essentially rotting away and things like that, it's pretty disgusting.
It's pretty disgusting.
And kind of freaks me out a little bit as far as, that goes because I don't want to get it.
Ugh.
Then I also watched Deadly Friend, which is kind of a lesser Wes Craven movie. That I never even remember that he did. But it's a young Christy Swanson who becomes kind of this cyborg robot. And there's some killing that happens and things like that. It's kind of a weird movie. The tone is odd.
Okay.
Because it seems like the beginning, it wants to be kind of like Short Circuit-esque with this cute robot. But then it takes this horror turn twist and things fall apart. Nicole. Anyway, it's okay. And I've probably watched some other things, too, but I can't remember what they are right now.
Well.
I do have plans, Nicole, either tomorrow or the next day, to watch Marathon, the entire Universal Monsters, Universal Frankenstein series of movies, which technically is about 8 movies.
Okay.
So I want to do that all in one day before Halloween, because on Halloween then... We're going to watch whatever we want. We'll just, put in movie after movie, one right after another.
Keep putting them
Just keep them going.
Keep pumping it out. Okay. Well,
We'll just go back and forth with choices. I'll choose one, then you'll choose one. That might be fun.
Okay.
Nicole doesn't want to choose.
Yeah, I do.
She hates choosing what to watch.
I hate
Craig, you just pick something.
I hate choosing where to eat.
Come on, Craig, you just pick something. Well, Nicole... We've completed the 16th annual A to Z of Horror Festival. And you know what, Nicole? In the past 6 weeks, we will have done 7 episodes, Nicole. Do you feel it? Can you feel it?
just another day.
Sure. Yes. I feel a little bit tired, so yeah. There's not going to be an episode the week after this one. There's going to be a little gap because we're going to try to go back to more like a two-week schedule. And there's a big holiday coming up, Nicole, in November. And people are saying, Thanksgiving.
No.
Before Thanksgiving, Nicole.
On a Friday.
There's a very special date on a Friday. That Friday is Friday the 13th. So, if you're familiar with the podcast, if you're familiar with me, you know that I love the Friday the 13th series. So, of course, we're going to go with Friday the 13th, the episode, part 3, which will actually be about Friday the 13th, the final chapter, which is actually the fourth movie in the series. So you got episode part 3 about the fourth movie, but the fourth movie is called the final chapter? What?
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Yeah, see?
You're
what
confusing
a mess.
Me.
So, we'll try to explain that more later if you are confused, like Nicole is currently confused. Anyway, yes, we'll be back with that episode on Friday, November 13th. Listeners, thank you for listening to the 16th Annual A to Z of Horror Festival. We hope you enjoyed it. You can make suggestions if you want for next year's festival, but I'm very stubborn. I probably already have half the list filled up already.
But if you have something for obscure letters, well, by all means, it might get in the festival.
Certainly, if you have a Q or an X, send it over. And if we haven't used it, man, that's probably going to get in.
That's like gold.
Yes, absolute gold, Nicole. Nicole, where can the listeners find us? On social media.
On Facebook.
Yes, that is on the page. A Cure for the Common Craig.
Instagram.
And that is Cure for the Common Craig.
Twitter
is at Common Craig.
And our website.
The website is cureforthecommoncraig.com. Nicole, we're recording this a little early in hopes that the editing is completed so that this episode can be released very near Halloween. So, we should say something to the listeners, Nicole.
What?
Well, we should say Happy Halloween! Nicole, we said it together. That's so cute. Kevin Bacon!